Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
The recent military ruler becomes the interim prime minister of Burkina Faso. An expert estimates the economic impact of the Ebola epidemic will be less than feared. I'm Dave DeForest reporting from Washington. The army officer who briefly seized power in Burkina Faso has been named prime minister of the country's transitional government. The appointment of Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zeta was announced today, a day after the new interim president, Michel Kafando, was sworn in. A World Bank official says the Ebola epidemic will not be as costly to West Africa's economy as previously feared, thanks to effective containment efforts. Francisco Ferreira, the bank's chief economist for Africa, told an audience in Johannesburg today that he expects the cost of the epidemic to be between $3 and $4 billion. The World Bank said in October that the economic impact could be as high as $32 billion if the virus spread significantly outside the borders of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Another woman has died of bird flu in Egypt, according to a health official cited in a story by the AFP News Service. It is the second such death from the H5N1 strain of the virus in the past week. The woman died after being admitted to a hospital in Minya province. Soldiers in the Ivory Coast are back in their barracks today, that after launching a pay protest in several cities across Ivory Coast yesterday. Ivorian officials promised to address the soldiers' demands. A meeting was planned today to deal with the pay issue. This is VOA News. Kenyan forces today raided two mosques in Mombasa in a search for weapons and Shabab militants. AFP reports that grenades, ammunition, and gasoline bombs were seized in the mosques. A local police chief says more than 100 people were arrested. Kenyan authorities have raided a number of mosques since Monday. The raids are said to have raised tensions in the city already hit by bombings and shootings. The Associated Press reports that Libya's warring parties have agreed on a 12-hour humanitarian truce in Benghazi. According to the United Nations, a UN official says the ceasefire started today and could be extended. Reuters reports that three African economic blocs will join to form a new 27-nation free trade zone. An agreement to be signed next month in Cairo would combine the common market for Eastern and Southern Africa, the Southern African Development Community, and the East African Community. The initiative will create a huge free trade zone comprising some 260 million consumers from South Africa to Ethiopia. French officials say they have identified a second Frenchman among the militants in a video showing the severed head of an American aid worker and the beheadings of at least 18 Syrian soldiers. President Francois Hollande said today during a visit to Australia that two French nationals are in the video released by the Islamic State group, but did not give details. A suicide car bomber has attacked the capital of Iraq's northern Kurdistan region, killing at least four people. The blast today in Erbil happened near a government compound. There was no immediate claim of responsibility. Israeli forces have demolished the houses of a Palestinian man who killed two people in an attack at a light rail stop last month. The demolition today in the Silwan area of East Jerusalem left rooms filled only with rubble. Security forces acted after Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called for the houses of two Palestinians who killed five people at a Jerusalem synagogue Tuesday to be destroyed. Russian President Vladimir Putin says his country wants a relationship with the United States based on respect. Mr. Putin, speaking at a Kremlin ceremony during which a group of new ambassadors to Russia presented their credentials, said Russia is ready for practical cooperation with the United States based on respect for each other's interests, equal rights, and non-interference in internal affairs. Police in Hong Kong fought with protesters today when the protesters tried to force their way into the territory's Legislative Council building. Protesters used metal barricades to smash windows in the building. It is unclear how many were able to enter the facility. In Washington, I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
With less than 3 months to go until presidential elections, Nigeria's government is scrambling to stabilize the economy amid a global fall in the price of oil, the country's top export.
That's Chris Stein reporting from Abuja. Details coming up. Also in the news, Cameroon says it has pushed back a group of suspected anti-Balaka rebels from the Central African Republic who attacked its territory yesterday. And a Cuban doctor working in Sierra Leone has contracted Ebola and is being flown to Geneva for treatment. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, unconfirmed reports today claim that 300 to 800 hardline militants loyal to the Islamic State forces of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi are now in control of a city in eastern Libya. These reports come as the UN Special Envoy to Libya announced today that some rival militias have agreed to a 12-hour ceasefire. In a statement issued this morning, the UN's Bernardo Leon said the ceasefire could be extended by agreement of the warring parties. Leon said the ceasefire allows Libyan Red Crescent to evacuate civilians from areas of conflict. Several hours after the agreement was made, it was not clear if shooting had stopped in Benghazi. Forces loyal to the government have for several weeks been trying to defeat Islamist militias that control the major parts of Libya's second largest city that is a key to the nation's oil export facilities. Radical Islamists operating in eastern Libya took control of the town of Derna more than a week ago and claimed allegiance to al-Baghdadi's forces in Iraq and Syria. Derna is a short drive from Tobruk, the port city where a parliament recognized by the UN and major Western powers as the legitimate Libyan government has been holding session in a hotel. The Congress evacuated the capital, Tripoli, when Islamists joined forces with another militia in Misrata and destroyed the international airport and took over the capital. Local newspapers report that hours before the ceasefire agreement, the Tobruk government ordered its military to retake the capital city. Islamist militias still control major portions of Tripoli and occupy the nation's largest oil field, El Saharara. The National Oil Corporation, which has maintained production at reduced levels throughout the conflict, shut down Al Saharara pumping operations last week. When the pipelines were closed, oil is the nation's major income earner. Cameroon says it has pushed back a group of suspected anti-Balaka rebels from the Central African Republic who attacked its territory yesterday, apparently to try and free one of their leaders. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
Cameroon Defense Minister Edgar Aleme Bengo says confrontations between the Cameroon military and suspected anti-Balaka rebels have been common during the past month. He says during Tuesday's attack in eastern Cameroon, his soldiers succeeded in forcing the rebels to retreat.
Nous faisons face, n'est-ce pas, à la rébellion en République centrafricaine.
He says rebels from the Central African Republic have been invading Cameroonian territory regularly. He says the Cameroon military is determined to defend Cameroon's territorial integrity and crush the rebels. The rebels are pressing for the release of one of their leaders, Abdoulaye Meskin, and 10 of their fellow anti-Balaka soldiers who were arrested last year in the Cameroonian area of Garoua-Boulaye, near the border with CAR. Last September, the suspected anti-Balaka fighters disguised themselves as refugees, fleeing the crisis in CAR and kidnapped a dozen Cameroonians. Cameroon's military spokesman, Colonel Dije Bajek, said since security conditions in CAR deteriorated in December of 2013, when clashes erupted between the Seleka and anti-Balaka groups, there has been instability in parts of eastern Cameroon and a pattern of anti-Balaka rebel incursions.
Le Cameroun paye le prix fort de l'instabilité prégnante de ses voisins. La situation sur le terrain est marquée par l'engagement.
He says instability in the Central African Republic has been causing lots of material and human losses in Cameroon, but that the military is determined to defend Cameroon and protect its people. Cameroon shares a 800-kilometer-long boundary with the landlocked CAR. There are currently some 300,000 CAR refugees in Cameroon. For the past 2 years, sectarian Christian and Muslim militias in CAR have been waging war against each other's communities with horrific violence. More than 2,600 Central Africans have died, and nearly 1 million of the country's 4.5 million residents have been displaced. 300,000 of them are in Cameroon. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
With less than 3 months to go until presidential elections, Nigeria's government is scrambling to stabilize the economy amid a global fall in the price of oil, the country's top export. Chris Stein reports from the capital, Abuja, on what the government is doing to keep Nigeria afloat as prices drop.
A barrel of oil now costs just under $80, and for Nigeria, that's a problem. Oil makes up 83% of the country's exports and 70% of the revenue in Africa's largest economy. But months before the February presidential election that will see incumbent Goodluck Jonathan stand for a second full term, oil is now trading at its lowest price in 4 years. Finance Minister Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala announced over the weekend a raft of measures the government would take to cushion itself against falling prices. These include new taxes on luxury cars, private jets and champagne, as well as a 6% cut in government spending.
We all know that these are global factors out, not very much in the control of a country like Nigeria or many of the oil-producing countries, but there are a number of international factors leading to it, from geopolitical to economic, the production of shale oil, certain geopolitical tensions, all are coming together to impact oil prices. But even if we can't affect the prices, we can control and will control the way that the country responds.
A glut of supply caused in part by increased oil exports from shale oil fields in the United States, as well as slowing growth in Europe and weakening demand from Asia, is behind the drop in prices. But Bismarck Rawani, CEO of Financial Derivatives Company Limited in the commercial capital Lagos, said the government has failed over the years to insulate the economy from oil price shocks, leaving it vulnerable to price drops like this one.
It is crunch time for Nigeria. And the reality is that how do you actually deal with this? The impact is simple. A 35% drop in income means that you've got to decide what projects you're going to defer, what projects you're going to cancel, and how you're going to increase the revenue base. What has been announced so far is a step in the right direction. It's not enough.
Nigeria's persistent insecurity in the oil-producing Niger Delta is another worry. Militants have for years sabotaged oil pipelines and made off with fuel, undercutting production. Pabinka Yinkeri, head of research at Lagos-based Vativa Capital Management, says missing production goals would cause further harm to Nigeria's budget.
If our production volumes fail to meet up with budget, I think that's the biggest threat. Regarding the price, there's nothing we can do about that. Market determined. What we may have control over is how much oil we produce.
Nigeria's currency has also suffered from the price drop, as investors grow nervous that a shortage of dollars from oil sales could undercut the Naira's value. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
The The new interim prime minister of Burkina Faso today appointed Lieutenant Colonel Isaac Zida as his prime minister. Zida relinquished military control of the country 2 days ago to comply with demands made last week by the African Union to turn the government over to civilian leaders. A committee of military, religious and political opposition leaders chose ex-foreign minister Michel Kafando to serve a one-year term as interim president. Kafando was one of five candidates and was nominated by army officers who took control of the government more than a week ago. Kafando and Zida are from the Mossi ethnic group. The military took power when crowds in the capital demanded the removal of longtime president Blaise Compaoré. The military named Colonel Zida to lead the country as Mr. Compaoré was escorted safely out of Burkina Faso. Zida said he would comply with demands by the African Union to turn the government over to civilian leadership. National elections are supposed to be held next November. The Interim Selection Committee said Kafando will not be eligible to run for office. Past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. A World Bank economist says the Ebola virus that has killed more than 5,000 people in West Africa will cost the regional economy as much as $4 billion. She estimates that half of the Liberian workforce is no longer working due to the epidemic. The World Bank's Anna Revanga says many of Liberia's workforce have been told to stay home to avoid contracting the virus. Others have lost their jobs in a spiraling economy as markets fail. A World Bank survey shows tourism has plummeted as much as 70%. Agriculture has fared better, but consumer incomes have suffered, and many families say they cannot afford to buy farm products anymore. Meanwhile, a Cuban doctor working in Sierra Leone has contracted Ebola and is being flown to Geneva for treatment. The doctor is one of 165 medical personnel Cuba sent to Sierra Leone to help fight the Ebola epidemic. The infection occurred despite intensive training that Cubans took after arriving in Freetown. Nina DeVries has more from the Sierra Leone capital.
The training for the Cuban medical staff in Freetown was organized through the World Health Organization, WHO. One goal was to reduce the dangers to medical workers. A WHO spokesperson in Freetown, Winnie Romerol, says there will be a thorough investigation of how the doctor contracted the deadly virus.
Accidental exposures happen in every country in the world. They're particularly hazardous when dealing with an unforgiving pathogen like Ebola. We're going to look into what happened here, and if it's a systemic problem, we'll look to change that. If there's something that we can do on the front end to better prepare people, we'll do that as well. But right now, we simply don't know exactly what happened with this individual.
The training the Cubans receive in Sierra Leone is twofold. They practice the proper use of personal protective equipment, or PPE, and to simulate experiences the medical staff may face, Ebola survivors reenact scenes of what they actually went through as Ebola patients. Benon Tamwibaze is a trainer for the Cuban teams in Sierra Leone.
We want the health workers to get the insight of, if you get a patient, how do you handle them? So here we present different cases which Ebola patients normally go through, like vomiting, like diarrhea. Some of them are confused. So we have such cases, and each case has got learning point.
Some of the Cubans are working in Carytown, just outside Freetown, where an Ebola treatment center was built. Others are still in training. Cuban medical worker Jose Bonito Garcia says it is Cuba's duty to come to West Africa and stop the worst Ebola outbreak in history. It's our tradition in Cuba, Garcia says, that we stand in solidarity with places that don't have resources to handle a crisis like this. Sierra Leone is one of those places. Garcia adds that the additional training on site through the WHO is helpful, because it's hard to know what to expect from Ebola patients.
Te lavaste las manos. Cogiste y te buscaste la solapa. Cogiste.
Yoel Bernal Ferreira has a similar view of the training.
From the professional point of view, it's very, very, very important for me because it's a new experience. The most important is that we can help the people that need our help.
Ebola survivor Mohamed Touré is glad to help in the training, but playing the role of an Ebola patient.
It is important because I don't want any member of my family or the country for them to lose their life. So it's important so that they can able to manage this case because it is a difficult case.
The medical staff had training in the use of personal protection equipment back in Cuba, too. The most challenging aspect is putting on and taking off the gear and dealing with heat, says Cuban nurse Julio Ramirez, who just started work at the Carytown Treatment Center. The slightest slip could result in an Ebola infection.
This is very hot. This is very hot. PPE is very hot for the inside the ward. Maybe 40 minutes, 45 minutes.
There are three Cuban teams in Sierra Leone and a total of 256 medical professionals from Cuba in West Africa to help stop the spread of Ebola. More than 5,000 people have died during this outbreak, among more than 14,400 confirmed cases worldwide. Nina DeVries for VOA News, Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Protecting the world's forests is promoted as a way of reducing greenhouse gas emissions. Forests store a lot of carbon in both trees and soil, which helps mitigate climate change. But some researchers say conserving forests alone will not significantly reduce emissions. VOA's Jody Capua explains.
It's estimated that protecting forests could prevent 77 billion tons of carbon dioxide from entering the atmosphere by the year 2100. Researcher Alexander Popp says protecting forests to abate climate change is definitely worthwhile.
Avoiding deforestation in general is a very important aspect, first of all in terms of carbon emissions avoidance, but also from other perspectives like biodiversity conservation, local livelihoods, or local climate aspects.
Popp is group leader on land use management at the Potsdam Institute for Climate Impact Research. He says while preventing deforestation does have beneficial effects, there can be consequences if that's all that's done.
Indeed, emissions are reduced, but what we could observe is that there are now new emissions occurring from kind of leakage effect, displacement effect.
In other words, preserving forests means other types of land would be used to grow crops instead. Pop says that would result in environmental losses.
Loss of non-forest ecosystems that also have a high carbon content in the soils, in the vegetation, like wetland savannas, for example, in Africa, or grasslands, and also have a high biodiversity content.
High biodiversity content means lots of plant and animal species. Current climate change negotiations include something called RED, or reduced emissions from deforestation and degradation. But Pop says it only focuses on protecting forests. He says that the largest benefits for climate change mitigation could be achieved by a forest conservation scheme and the inclusion of other land types with high carbon content.
We did big computer simulations and we looked at three different potential future land use worlds. One scenario without any carbon conservation, one with avoided deforestation only, and one with conservation of all land use types that have high carbon content.
The all-inclusive model yielded the greatest carbon benefits and protected biodiversity. But if a wide variety of land is protected, how does agricultural production increase to feed a rapidly growing global population? Pop says one way is to boost yields on existing farmland.
In sub-Saharan Africa, there's much more potential for agricultural yields that we currently observe, and therefore much more potential for agricultural production. If these potential yields could be catched up compared to the current yields we observe today and improved smallholder farm management, that would be an added value in terms of taking reducing the pressure from the land and therefore decreasing agricultural expansion.
Another way to meet future food needs, he says, is by reducing waste in agricultural production. Much food is lost through poor harvesting methods and lack of proper storage and transportation. Also, studies have shown billions of dollars worth of food is wasted every year in developed countries. For example, the Natural Resources Defense Council has estimated that 40% of food in the United States goes uneaten, the equivalent of $165 billion a year. It says the food then rots in landfills, adding another greenhouse gas to the atmosphere, methane. Livestock production in developed countries, he says, also uses a lot of resources. It also produces a lot of methane. Pop says if demand for agricultural commodities is reduced by cutting waste and making agriculture more efficient, there would be less demand for land use.
By decreasing the production levels that are needed from the land, there automatically would be a decrease in the pressure on the land and therefore less expansion of agricultural production into unused land like forest or other natural land would happen.
Given the lack of progress made in climate change negotiations, Pop and his colleagues doubt their comprehensive approach will be adopted now. They say a more achievable approach may be to protect non-forest areas that can store a lot of carbon and have good biodiversity. The Red Plan, they say, would have to be altered so funds can go to programs not related to forests. The next climate change conference takes place in Lima, Peru, known as COP20, or Conference of Parties. The meeting runs from December 1st to the 12th. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Hayes Wuhib in Washington. Thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Exactly is Ebola?
Can I catch Ebola through the
air? Are the people who have it contagious?
What is our government doing about Ebola?
What are the symptoms of Ebola?
You have questions about Ebola? Straight Talk Africa has answers. VOA presents Straight Talk Africa, Ebola, Knowledge is Life. A special town hall meeting with leading experts on the front lines who will answer many of the questions surrounding the Ebola outbreak. VOA presents Straight Talk Africa, Ebola, Knowledge is Life. November 19th, only on VOA.
And this VOA programming note, that special 90-minute Straight Talk Africa show, Ebola, Knowledge is Life, begins at 18:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Here's advice from the international medical group Doctors Without Borders, also known as MSF, to help limit the spread of the Ebola virus. First, do not touch or eat the bushmeat of animals from the forest. Avoid contact with blood, urine, feces, vomit, sweat, tears, saliva, mucus, or genital secretions of an Ebola patient. Do not handle the bodies of the patients who have died of Ebola. Inform the nearest health center of any suspected Ebola cases. Seek health care immediately, because infected people have a much higher survival rate if they receive early treatment at a health facility compared to staying home. These are recommendations from the medical aid group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, on how to prevent the spread of Ebola.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.